Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hi guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer with the CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you guys are doing fantastic because we have a very special guest. Mandy Pollack is the managing partner of Watermark Capital Partners. And we're going to hear a lot about commercial real estate today. So, Mandy, first of all, thank you for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Here's the first question. You got into commercial real estate. How, why, what got you in this thing?
What got me into this, huh?
Yes.
I started as a mortgage broker in 2002. I don't know if you heard of, I'm sure you heard of Eastern Union. We're working for Ira Zlotowicz. I was there for 7 years, and in the crash in 08, 09, I left to start a consulting business because it was kind of quiet at that point, at least for my business. And I did a lot of consulting for borrowers who were underwater. And basically in trouble, financial trouble, whether it was underwater or just no cash flow. A lot of CMBS workouts. I did CMBS workouts. And from there, in 2012, I shifted into from consulting and consulting for borrowers and helping them work out their distress. I started buying paper, non-performing paper.
Notes. Yeah.
Commercial real estate notes. A residential, a little bit, nothing, not like owner occupied, but investment properties, and since that's what I've been doing since then, and I also buy real estate, and that's so. How did I get into it? Basically back there, how did I get into it? I had a family, and I needed to make a parnosa. I needed to make a living. I wanted to take care of my family, so I started that business.
That's the most noble cause, as we call it.
When you're up against what they say, there's no atheist in a foxhole. Yeah, you have no choice but to make it happen, right?
Exactly.
So I always like numbers. I like real estate in general. I always wanted to be a landlord. That's where I started. It's a good place to start to be a mortgage broker because, you're talking to so many different real estate owners. And you're trying to get business from them, and you see so many different property types, especially like new mortgage brokers. You try to get whatever business you can get your hands on, right? You want to get a shot from somebody, so you get you're developing your niche, like what are property types you like to work on, and the different asset classes, different borrowers in different locations. So, I got to hear about a lot of different businesses. As a mortgage broker, you get a crash course in real estate because you're talking to, you call somebody up, you don't necessarily know what kind of property they're financing or their need financing for. So you whatever it is that they're going to send you. So I think as a mortgage broker, it's like, if you want to get the quickest crash course in real estate, a mortgage broker is the way to go because, you get to see what different people are working on. So that's how, as a mortgage, that was the first part of my, experience, the first 7 years as a, working for IRA. I did a lot of
So let's stop with that for just 1 second, because some people who are listening, they're beginners, and they're interested in understanding why is it a great crash course? Because I have in mind already why, because obviously there's the talk from this side of the sponsor, of the person who actually needs the mortgage, needs the financing. And then on the other side, there are the demands of the banks. But if you could be a little bit, give an example, for example, of how it works, so people can understand really why is it a crash course?
Good question. So simply put, what is a mortgage broker? What do they do? What's their job, right? Their job is to help real estate owners get their transactions closed, right? So you're assuming someone that's an experienced borrower already knows a little bit what they're doing, but they, you know, they have the equity together. You need to get them the debt. Okay. Now, in order to get debt for somebody, in order to procure and to get somebody a quote, you got to understand their business plan, right? You have to read them. You have to see their setup, their projections, and then you understand. So what ends up happening? So you put together your set. Like, let's just go a simple example. You call somebody up. He needs a mortgage. Okay. You know, they teach you in the mortgage brokerage. The first thing they teach you when you're working for a broker is you got to get the numbers. You got to get the setup. So you get their rent roll. You know exactly what you're supposed to get. You get their income and expense statement, the projections. You put them together. You run that, you know, the rent roll through the model. You figure out what their gross income is. Multifamily is the simplest pretty much when it comes to that. Then you put your expenses in and you're like, okay, this is the bottom line that either he has now or he's projecting. You know, let's just use a round numbers, you know, and back in the day, you know, a 10 cap, everyone was looking for 10 caps, but now you can't even touch anything. So
there were times.
That's how we trained, by the way, because it was just a simple way to do it. Okay, so I'm buying a multifamily building. The net operating, you know, the gross income is 200,000. The net income is 100,000. You know, he's paying $1 million for the property, right? Halavai, right? You know, imagine. So you're getting $100,000 net income. That's a 10% cap rate. That's, you figured that, okay, so you need to put down $250,000. It's just a very simple thing to understand. You know, you have your 75% financing, 250 down payment. And then, you know, obviously in that scenario, it's pretty simple. Then you send it out to a lender. The lender's going to come back to you and he's going to ask you a million questions, right? You're going to he's going to call you back. And back in the day, when I started, everyone ran their own deals. So it's not like today. I mean, from what I understand, I'm not working at a mortgage brokerage shop, but the couple of people that I speak to, yeah. And when you start off, you're just pounding the phones and you're calling people and calling them, trying to get business. You don't even know what you're doing. You bring in, you know, to get rentals and, you know, you get setups, you bring it in. And then the underwriter, he explains to you what you're looking at, right? But when I was starting, everyone ran their own deal. So you put together your setup, you send a fax, okay? Forget, it wasn't even emails then. You fax it to the lender, you get a call back. He asks you, what's this, what's that? And then you start to learn here, oh, this, you know.
Like, the best way to learn is to hear what their requirements are and then finding them and then hear the comments. That's the best way, right?
Right. Like where I'll tell you, oh, you know, expenses he has, or repairs and maintenance, he has $100 a unit. And he's like, no way that's going to fly, right? And he cuts your expenses down, you know, or he increases your expenses by $400 a unit. I'm just giving you an example. So right there, you're like, oh, okay. Now I know that to run a building. And again, you're talking about a guy who straight out of yeshiva, doesn't know anything. Smart guys, they know, they understand math. They get basic math. Oh, so like now I know when I get a setup next time and shows expenses, you know, you learn all the line items, you learn how to, so then you start to understand how to underwrite cash flows and figure out returns, you know, basic. Then you understand cash and cash return, like what they're, you know, once you're doing that, you're starting to climb into the mind of the real estate owner. And then the lender tells you, you know, go out and find this, you know, find out why your client is doing this, et cetera. And or why he's projecting that, or what, or just, you know, different things about different expenses in the property, and you just get to learn a lot. So, you know, then, and the same thing when it gets to other property types, and you have office buildings and shopping centers and industrial, you really just get to learn a lot of the jargon by, you know, I guess
being in the conversation, right?
Being in the conversation, yeah. You schmoozing with owners, and you meet with them. You know, some of them are willing to teach. Some of them are not willing to teach. Some of them like not, you know, no on your own. You know, I was fortunate to learn from a lot of like old timers that, like, you know, when I talk to them, I you know, they're like, oh, let me show you this. Let me explain to you. And they had patience and talk to me. So those are the best, you know, those are the best clients because.
You know what, I'll ask you, I'm very curious about this. What's the difference between today's, I would say the Excel, the Argus, the new, you know, format of analyzing a deal versus the old timers, as we call it, the back of the envelope type of analysis. What is the difference? Can you, because you're here now and you're doing it, and then you dealt with that and you learned from those guys. What can you say about that?
So what can I say about it? You know, it's an interesting question. I would say that, I think what you mean is, you know, just literally looking at the numbers and running them through the models versus...
Today it's IRR.
I mean, what was IRR, that? It gets more sophisticated, but, you know, sometimes, yeah. I'll tell you, right now, when I buy real estate, the only thing I care about, I would just say the only thing I care about, the number one thing I care about when I'm looking at a property, what am I paying for the bricks? Exactly what am I paying for the bricks? Not like, what is the return now? What is it throwing off? Because at the end of the day, the return is just a function of today, of what's right. happening. First of all, second of all, it's kind of like a made up formula, because, you know, someone could lie about expenses very easily. They can't lie about the size of the building is what it is. Okay, you know, you have to figure out how big is this property, how much parking is the property. You know, does the property have like, you know, and what are your air? You know, you were mentioned before, you've been in the development business, right? What are the air rights? So there's parts of the property that are not necessarily, you know, what you, it's not like what you see, it's what the potential of the property is, right? So, and it helps both ways, because if you're going to only look at the income, you may be missing something. Because just as an example, I look for, when I buy real estate, I look to unlock trapped value. And if I have this, like, what's my elevator pitch? And anyone asks me what I do, I either add value or unlock value. There's value that's built into a property, and I try to just access it, right? So the numbers are really, you know, it's great. It's like you model it out. But so discounted cash flow is a great way. If you're gonna look at numbers, and I think Argus is the way to go, because, you know, that at the end of the day, you put everything, I mean, everything you load into that model. You know, what you're gonna, you know, what you can assume the rent's gonna be, the rent growth, the expense growth. You know, sometimes you could beat the daylights out of it, and you over underwrite it. You know, you killed it too much, because
yeah, the some of us who still love the Excel,
but it's an intuitive thing. I think that the old timers, I think they had that same exact mindset, which is simple. Like, I don't need to know what the, like, you know, what it's going to model out. I know what I'm buying the bricks for, and I know what the property next door sold for. So like, that's the real true value of the real estate. What could I replace it? How much would it cost me to replace this building?
Exactly. There's a guy, I'll just share with you this. There's a guy I know who's one of the big, I'm not going to mention the name. He's a very, very large operator of real estate in Manhattan. And I know him personally, a very, very good guy, a lot of charity, very good guy. And I met one of his guys, his analyst, and I'm asking him, oh, I'm just curious, how do you guys do it? So he said, I sit on the numbers, I put it all in, I analyze just like every other guy, just plug and play. And obviously some models are different than others. I put it together. It takes me sometimes a day, sometimes 2-3 days, but I plug it in and everything's nice. And then comes the part where he comes in and says, okay, the numbers looks fine, I want to see the place. So he tells me a story that once they went to see in Manhattan, one of those buildings, And they go with a cab, and he gets out of the cab. He didn't get into the building. He looks to the right, and then he looks to the left, and he says, "Let's get out of here." And he's like,
"Ready to buy or even not?"
"No, I'm not buying it." And the guy said, "Whoa, wait! We didn't see the building. We didn't look if it matches the square footage. We didn't see. We didn't speak to the current owner. We didn't get the rent. You know, I don't need." I looked, it's garbage. I'm not buying it. Why? What did you see? And he said, if I start explaining to you what I see and what I don't see, it's going to take 3 weeks just to talk to you. So I'm just telling you, we're not buying it. It's bad. It's not good. And that's it. And obviously he saw the area and he saw something there that was wrong for him. And he said, that's not for me. I'm not buying. Maybe the subway was not in the right place. Maybe there was a development right across the street. Who knows? So I can really relate.
Yes, 100%. And the one difference, and again, you know, I'm not a billionaire developer in Manhattan. Maybe one day I will. Hopefully, I will be one day. But I think that that's the biggest mistake on that deal is that he didn't explain to him why he didn't buy it. Because, you know, let the guy learn. Explain to him. And I'll tell you, like, I talk to brokers all the time. I never tell somebody no without explaining. I don't care who it is. I don't care who the broker is. I don't care if this guy looks like his next closing will be his first, because I don't want to waste my time again, right? If I'm selling,
That's a great point.
Explain to him, like, let me explain to you how I look at things, and then when I get that call, when the next time you think of me, you'll know exactly how I think, you know?
Right. That's a good point. Let's shift gears a little bit.
Cool story, though.
It's a very cool story. Let's shift gears a little bit. I want to go to okay, that's, first of all, it's a beautiful story of how you start, how you learn, how you got to know this business, how you got from the old school to the new age, as we call it. By the way, talking about Excels and Argus today already, and I'm dealing, as I said before we started recording, I told you that I'm dealing with prop tech, property technology and innovation. Today we already have, it's already being done. You have machine learning techniques that are getting all the information. So I'm pretty sure that at a certain point, I don't know which point it would be, and the analyst job would be just to back it up and check, but the machine is going to do the whole modeling. So we know that will happen. It's underway. But before we go any further, what I want to do is let's talk about the now. A company is called Watermark with a Q Capital Partners. You're the managing partner of it. What is the vision of the company? What do you guys do today? And tell us a little bit about that.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. The, you don't have to say everything. Just, no, you know,
I'm gonna say as much as I could. So essentially, you know, like I said, I'm my background is in debt. Like, I'm grounded in that very much. So number one, from my background of starting as a mortgage broker. So I think like a lender. I really do. I spent a lot of, you remember Intervest? Do you remember Jerry Dansker?
Yes. But I remember him, but I remember, yeah.
Awesome. I'm driving you off the topic, but I used to sit and I would, whatever I could get out of that guy, I would just love to talk to him and let him educate me and teach me, right? So, and I really got a good feel for the debt business. So like fundamentally, I look at every deal. Like, I'm very, very focused on risk management. So, and I look at every deal. I want to buy. I know it's going to sound nuts, and you're like, okay, this guy is really not doing anything today. But I try to buy deals. Like, I literally look at every deal. I'm like, how can I like grind the risk down that I'm buying this property for like what I would want to lend on it, right? So. Right. It's crazy. And the way you do that, obviously, is you buy property that are underutilized, right? Undervalued, either that or there's a encumbrance in the property that's just cramping, is keeping the property value down. So that, obviously, the one way you buy the property for, like, you know, what you as a number that's like that risk is managed is obviously you buy properties that are vacant. Right. So, because that's how you buy the property for the price on the brick that you're looking for, because it's not full. So you can't, it's not fully utilized. Right.
Right.
And you know that if I stabilize the property, let's say I'm buying right now, Mitzvah Hashem, I'm closing Bezrat Hashem on Thursday.
Please God.
Building in Central Florida. I'm not going to go into where, and I'm paying $77 a square foot and it's 60% occupied. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm buying it at a very nice cap rate from, you know, considering the risk and whatever. Okay. And by the time you show this, I'll probably have bought it already. So I'm not worried about it, you know? So anyway, but that property, like, I feel like it's intrinsic value is worth way more. And I'm projecting, and I believe very, very strongly based on comparables, I think I will sell this property for $150, $160 a square foot.
Let's take that. Sorry, I'm stopping you, but I just, sure. That's very interesting. So where, for example, is, you don't have to, obviously we don't know the property, but where do you see the value, the upside in this? First of all, let's ask two parts, okay? First of all, where is the discount that you find in this property? And the second thing, where is the upside? Meaning, where is this side? Where is that side that makes it so interesting to you in that property, for example, to go into? Let's hear that.
Okay, good. So how do I manage risk is what you're, sounds like what you're asking.
Yeah. Right?
And where the upside is. So the risk management comes from the fact that there are two government tenants in the property. I don't believe in an office, really. In theory, I'm actually, I don't believe in it. I think that office is a tough office market. It's a tough.
Especially today.
Okay, let me rephrase that. I don't say I don't believe in office. I don't believe in buying stabilized office buildings. Okay, I believe in buying anything if you could buy it below what someone would buy it stabilized, and there's enough wiggle room that I could buy it for X, stabilize it for Y, and sell it for Z. And I know that I'm making a profit somewhere in between there, right? So how do you do that? How do you do that in today's market? So
what we call value add, and it's so hard.
It's value add. But I believe that the downside risk is protected, very very strong downside protection. And there's essentially the 40% that's vacant, is like, basically, I would say, probably 10% of the entire, you know, vacancy in the whole, I'm sorry, but let me just rephrase that. To stabilize this property, I got to do one lease, and I could sell this property at a very nice discount. I mean, a very nice profit. Okay. So I'm managing the risk by buying government leases, which I, you know, according to my research and my firm belief, those leases are not going out. Based on what I've discovered, okay. So I have them. They're in there for between 7 and 10 years. Those leases, okay. And I have the upside of the rest of the building, and I'm buying it at a market cap rate right now, probably above market cap rate, about 9 and change, going in. So and essentially all I need to do is bring this property to a 80% occupancy, and I made a profit. And the property historically was 90% occupied, over 90% occupied. So that's how I manage it. Essentially, I manage the risk by my downside is managed, and I believe there's strong upside based on what I'm paying for it. You know, I'm buying this thing at stabilized properties in that market are selling let's say 160 a foot, somewhere in that ballpark. So basically, the estimate is I buy it for 77, I spend 30, and I sell it for, you know. So I'm in for 107 and I sell it for 160. That's particular. Now it's an off-market transaction, and it's complicated because you have government leases, they have out clauses technically. So I was able to, you know, manage that and figure out where, you know, that I don't have the risk that's perceived on the property.
But in this one, you're coming from the angle as a buyer, not as a note, right?
Exactly. Okay, so I know you asked me, and I have a tendency to drive off topic a little bit. So drive me back on. Essentially, like this. So you back to what you were asking. What is our philosophy? What do we do? So really, like I said, I'm a property guy. I'm a property guy, but I also have a background in debt. So I buy real estate, and when I say background in debt, I understand how to value real estate from the risk perspective. And I look for profits. I'm not really a lender. I'm not looking to like be a lender and just make a return, you know? So essentially there's three products. One product is I buy real estate, depressed real estate, stressed. It's all revolves around the distressed world. And that's just simply, listen, if I could buy a property that's not distressed for below market, I would do that. But I don't think that exists. Yeah. You know, there's always some level of distress. I bought a building out of bankruptcy. So it was the property was great actually, but there was a bankruptcy there. We had to buy it all cash. And we were dealing with tenants that were like, were all month to month tenants. And we had to stabilize the property. So like there was a lot of lease up risk. So if they left, I had a vacant building. And if they, you know, and if they stayed, I had a full building and I was able to sell it at a good cap.
Yeah.
So it's distressed. That's really where I looked to find opportunity. And I buy debt, which is again, another way to access the equity of the property without paying full price for it, right? So just as an example, let's go with the same $1 million analysis before. You have a property worth $1 million, and the loan, let's say the loan on the property is $1 million, right? And you know, so what do you buy the property for? You don't buy it for par. You don't buy it for whatever the loan is. You don't. Right. What do you buy the debt for? So you, everyone knows you can't buy a prop. You wouldn't make a loan for 100% of the value. So you wouldn't buy a property or buy a loan for 100% of the value. So essentially, you have to buy the paper as if you're making a loan, right? So, but that's also essentially buying the property, right? Because I'm buying the property through the debt. And you're able to access 30% discount. You just have to know how to work the foreclosure process, how to get your hands on the property, how to deal with, you know, the litigation in the process, and how to deal with like irate tenants that are, you know, you want to try to keep the property as stabilized as possible. So that's just another way of access. So like essentially, I want to access the equity of the property for as little as possible. And I consider equity the bricks and sticks, right?
Right.
And so moving on, and this is a strategy that we've done selectively, lending, right? Lending, and the lending is also, again, you know, I wouldn't want to necessarily call it loan to own, you know, but it's when I buy, when I make a loan, essentially saying, you know what, I'm willing to take a bet here. You know, I feel like I would love to own this property, and you have a borrower who really doesn't have a viable exit strategy, and I'm willing to take a shot. You know, I'm happy to give them the time they need to do it.
So that's a big question, is that because most financial institutions, what they're looking for when they're giving a loan is the steady, stable, 100% backed income. Okay, that's what they want, with a great collateral. Okay, especially first position, but even mezz. So what you're saying, I just want to make sure that I understand correctly, that you're going.
Yeah, you'll edit it if I'm saying something wrong.
you're getting into a property. You have a strategy where you're getting into a property as giving a loan, okay, to the certain type of a developer. With, you say, if he flies, great. I got a great deal. I'm backed. And hopefully he'll be successful.
Yes.
But if he doesn't, great also. I'll take it over and I can run it. Is that correct? Is that a way to do it?
I would word it a little differently. So like let's talk about different scenarios, okay? One scenario is someone has a first mortgage and they're in trouble, right? Those same different most lenders you talk about don't want to get into a situation where they know that it's going to end, or there is a good chance it's going to end in you know, a contentious relationship. Okay.
Right.
I view it as an opportunity to get overpaid on a rate, right? Number one. So I see, like, listen, you know, I'm comfortable with my basis. And for those situations, I want to do larger loans. I'm not just looking to put out. So I'm profit driven. Listen, it's all about making profits, right? So like if I'm buying real estate, it's profit driven. If I'm buying a loan, it's profit driven. Because I buy a loan very often, I just get paid off. I don't end up with the property. So even then, like, let's think about what it's all about. Yeah, there's a lot of benefits to owning the real estate. You get the depreciation, you get, you know,
right,
tax write-off, intentional, et cetera, you know, but I feel like there's other, you know, parts to it that make a lot of sense. So that's like a first loan scenario. And I've done that. And you know, these loans, I could be, you know, they can be levered. So if I'm making a loan at 12 or 14% or whatever it may be, and no one else is taking the chance on that. So I feel like, why not? I'm providing a service. I don't want to, I'm not in the business of, like, I'm not really a lender. I'm not in the lending business. I'm not in the business that I'm going to compete for, like, with the classic hard money lenders in the world that are looking to make their rate of, you know, 9-10%.
Right.
I'm looking to get to make money, to make a profit. And I feel like, you know, I learned how to navigate the foreclosure process. So if I need to do that, I will. So I can take a little more risk and I can get paid for that risk. So, and that's happened actually in a few different ways. Because what I've done, and I have no problem doing this, you know, if someone's looking for a, you know, a takeout of a foreclosure situation, there's a lot of different ways to do that.
Right.
You could buy the debt and restructure with them. Guys, no problem. You know what? I'll tell you what, I'll buy the debt and just pay me what I'm owed. I'll give you the time you need to work everything out, you know? So there's opportunity there. So there's a lot of different ways to access the value in real estate.
Right. Listen, I want to shift gears a little bit again. I want to go, we had a very funny year, which was not so funny for a lot of people, whether it was health-wise, some people, you know, were hurt, and we hopefully are getting out of this whole thing. And some people got hurt financially, and the real estate market, what is going to be now? What's going to happen now? We're going to talk about it in a second. I want to ask you, how did you maneuver this whole thing called COVID in your business? Getting into this, what did you do? You went into acquisitions, you didn't. You froze and then you looked at the market. What do you guys do?
We froze. I'm still frozen in a certain way.
Don't we all? Yep.
I mean, I look at every deal I look at. You know, I'm like I said, I'm very, very focused on risk management, right? So
right.
Every deal I look at, I'm like, okay, what's this thing going to be worth if, you know, I don't know, the government stops printing money?
So, but what happened when it came out March last year, you're looking at deals, you're active, you're, you're busy, you know, you're underwriting all that stuff. And all of a sudden pandemic close, like, you know, everybody is lockdowns.
I dropped three deals. I did.
Oh yeah.
I did. I
what was them. The reason immediately? Rent rolls. What was that?
Okay, I was around in 08, 09, and I remember what the lack of liquidity did to the real estate market. Essentially, there was a massive deleveraging right. Because there was no money around. So when there's no money around, overnight, real estate values come crashing down. And I looked at the stock market the first couple of days, and I was like panicking. I'm like, oh my God, the world is coming to an end.
Right.
That's and I'm like, okay, now I have to figure out, I have to hunker down for the next you know, until everything works through its system. And really, which I had the same question right now, honestly, I'm frankly concerned about things like where do we go from here? I mean, who knows what's going to be like, just because we're out of the woods from the health perspective, potentially. Right. But I believe we are, but who says that we've really felt the full brunt of the financial aspect, which is that, you know, does anyone know how many retail centers are really going to be destroyed? I mean, I talked to some servicers, some loan servicers that I bought a lot of debt from, and like I couldn't get the guy on the phone for the past week because he's like, I'm dealing with COVID forbearances, I can't talk now, over and over. And he's like, you don't even know. He's like, they're giving them out like candy. You know? So who knows, like when eventually you would think that the government's going to have, let you know, eventually the lenders are going to say, okay, fine, you know, foreclosures start over again. Now they're showing foreclosures on their books, you know, and now when you have Democrats in office, if I'm allowed to get political.
I'm not a political show.
Okay. I don't know.
I'm not going to comment, but yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to, I believe that there's going to be some, I think with the regulation overseeing what the banks are doing, and they're gonna see foreclosures on their books. It's gonna have to happen eventually, right? So they're gonna force them to liquidate. If banks have to liquidate, you would have to assume that there's gonna be some level of liquidity crisis, right? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I just don't feel like fundamentally we're back.
We're not bad. Right. Fundamentally, and I'm with you on that one. We didn't see the end of it. There's so much forbearance out there that we don't know where the end of that curve is going to happen. And all these foreclosures are going to pop out. And in some places they already start, in some places not. In some places, maybe the government will come up with another solution, another, you know, stimulus or package or PPP loans that will, you know, push it even further. We don't know. But my question to you is, once we saw this whole thing happening, we all froze. We felt the same way. I wanted to hear from you, your take, and you said that. And you know, this big question mark above our heads at the time happened. When was the point where you said, okay, I'm ready to go and look at deals? I mean, obviously you looked at deals all the time, but when was the point that that initial, I would call it, I wouldn't call it fear, but initial meaning feeling, I don't know where I am type of feeling, stopped and you said, okay, I understand now pretty much where I am and I'm looking at those type of deals and that's where I'm going. When was that point that you did that?
I would say probably September.
September. And which deals you were starting to look at?
So obviously, like I started, you know, I focused a lot more. I started looking at industrial properties. Actually, really more than anything, I shifted to look in Florida, actually.
That's interesting.
Florida and Texas, I feel like this, you know, real estate.
Right, that's where the market's going, without a doubt.
Real estate is about occupying space. That's all it really is, if you think about it. And figuring out where the demand is, no matter what. So like, as long as there are human beings occupying the planet, they will need space, right? Look what's going on in the housing market, right? Everyone just picked up and left wherever they left and they're flocking to certain areas. What is that? So that's just pricing doesn't go up for nothing, right? It goes up because people want to be wherever they want to be. So when you have, if I had in my office right now, 700 people, like I would, you know, probably pay a few people to get out of here, right? So like, it's just about space. So like when you start realizing that's when I started realizing, okay, maybe it was a little, it could be it was earlier, like July, maybe June, July. But the point is, it was like, I realized, okay, the world is not coming to an end. There are still humans being born every day, right? And it was just a matter of finding where the humans want to be and what they, you know, industrial. The reason why industrial is so strong is because essentially industrial is the new retail, you know? And now where do people get, how do people access their stuff?
Right. And we had a few shows about this. Some people are getting into industrial like crazy. And we had a few very interesting shows about the industrial part. And that's a very, very cool asset class that everybody, there's a huge hype around that asset class. What I want to ask you is, okay, where are we going? Meaning obviously your crystal ball is probably not with you in the office. You forgot it at home. It's in the trunk, it's somewhere, but you don't have it. So I'm asking you as a normal human being and as a real estate guy, where do you think we are going? And I'm not talking about this year, 2021. I'm talking about 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025. Where are we going? Where is the real estate market? What's the trend in general you think, you believe, where is it heading?
That's like a really, really broad question.
It is a broad question, but I'll tell you why I'm asking, because
where is it heading?
Because we are asking ourselves all the time this question. Real estate guys, we're right. Trying to learn the markets, like you said, where are people going? Like Wayne Gretzky said, I want to know where the pack is going, not where he is.
Exactly, right. So I think that it's going to have to shake out a little more.
Is it what?
It's going to have to shake out a little more. Right. And I think,
I think
the monetary policy of the country is going to determine a lot of that. I do believe that. It's a very difficult, and I'm telling you right now, again, especially considering where I've been, I saw the crash, you know, the crash. I don't know if I knew, like I said, if I knew that, you know, I wouldn't be here. I would probably, you know, I think that you have to focus on things that make sense to you as at the moment, obviously. And you try to be intelligent and try to like ask a lot of questions and make sure you're not doing, you know, you're not doing, making stupid moves. I think that I'll tell you, you know, I live in New Jersey. I live in Lakewood, New Jersey. The housing prices have gone insane where I live, you know? So I think that, I can't imagine that my children will be able to afford living where I live, right? So again, because I don't think incomes are keeping up with cost of with cost of living in general, right? So I live in Lakewood, you know. So let's say homes in a decent, you know, decently sized 4,000, 5,000 square foot house, you know, which is I guess when you have a big family, that's you know, good size. Over $1 million, easy, right? Now, some people, depending on where you're in Brooklyn, that's probably nothing, right? But what I think is going to happen is I think there's going to be a lot of new markets that emerge, a lot of different places, just simply to deal with, like, people focus on cost of living, right? And I don't think that pricing, that incomes are going to keep up, like I said, with real estate. So there's a certain, it provides a certain opportunity to, like, look into new markets where, like, I think follow that. I think I'm very into that. Follow where there's affordable housing. And I think there's newer markets are going to emerge. Like, look at play in Florida. And that's exactly what's driving people to Florida, if you think about it, right? In Florida, Jacksonville, Orlando, like, you know, Tampa, those places are already expensive. So people like warm weather. They like the fact that the taxes are low.
That's a huge benefit. Huge benefit. Yeah.
So, like, I think that just eventually, as long as human beings are given the right to, like, move where they want to move in this country, I think there'll always be opportunity.
That's right. It's a big country, what drives it. Right, because if one place is losing, the other one is winning, and you have to just find out what's the next thing, where the jobs are going, where's the migration, everything. Check it. Yeah. Right.
Jobs follow cost of living, I think, you know, in a big way. Obviously, companies move to places where tax benefits and there's, you know, opportunity. Right. Like, why? So that's where people, so, and again, they need, because people can't live with the same jobs, you know.
I think it's a combination of a lot of parameters why companies are moving. It's going to be tax. It's going to be where their employees, the base, where they based, you know, where they will find the best thing for their company. Weather is a big thing, I believe, also. You know, the commute. A lot of things are being put in one decision for a company to move, and obviously policy. You know, policy is huge. What I want to ask you now.
Tech also, you know.
Big thing.
So like Zoom and things like that. Listen, I don't think the office market is going to die forever, but I think that, you know.
It's shifting.
And I think that like this kind of stuff, you know, Zoom and being able to work from home, they'll pick up, you know, a lot of people will be able to work from home. And they'll be able to move to where they want to move to. So I think
right. The claim, I'll tell you what, from my opinion, and that's what I hear, and I agree with that. I think office will be back, but not to the scale that we used to be, meaning the big cities are going to be back. New York's going to be back. The question is when. It's going to take time, I think. But people are going to go back to the office, with the exception of exactly what you just said. People get used to work at home and said, hey, I could do that. So they could do it maybe twice a day, twice a week. Maybe three times a week, depends on the company that they work for. I want to ask you something. You're in Lakewood, you said, right, in New Jersey. And you are not close to New York in a way. It's like an hour and a half, okay, something like that. And at the same time, you work in Florida. And at the same time, you look at different type of locations. If you could tell us a little bit about how you run your business in terms of your employees, how many people you maneuver, how do you get that ability to work remote? Meaning to remote, I'm talking about Florida. And obviously this year, you couldn't really travel much. And how did you do that? Who do you use? How do you use? What is your, I would say, system? What is your method in order to achieve those?
That's a good question. So we don't have a very big staff. There's about 5-6 people on staff. We're very selective in the deals we look at, okay? And I have a very good network. I have a good network of people, a very good broker network. You know, I spend a lot of time over the past, you know, 19 years making a lot of connections. So when I need to get something, you know, I need to get evaluations. I need to get an opinion. I have a good network to be able to do what I need to do. Let's see. That was that. What else did you wanted to know? You wanted the system, like
the system. It's like, for example, you said already brokers. You say you have a small staff, but everybody's, I guess, connecting to those brokers, that the network that you've built over time.
Right.
So they're connecting.
We use on-site man. We do asset management from the office. But we have people on, boots on the ground, very important that boots on the ground. And I'm always
third party. You always hire a third. Yeah.
Third party management. We do a lot. We're very on top of things. Like you have to really,
how often would you go to visit a property if it's multifamily, for example?
I would say, probably once a month.
Once a month. Yeah. So this, I guess, so, okay, so that's fair. But this year,
the office building, like, for example, this particular deal, I like Florida, so I plan on going as often as possible.
Became a very, the biggest attraction, right, for a lot of people. Yeah,
exactly. So, it really depends. It really depends on the asset and depends on if there's a need, we try to get the right people on the ground handling the assets. I'd like to be able to get to a property relatively quickly. If I'm going to look at something, I want to know that I could go with one, in one day, probably one flight only. I've tried looking at other assets that are like complicated to get to, and I realize it's just not a good model because
Right. You
got to be able to access the property.
Tell me something, which areas you would say in Florida are the interesting areas, because Florida is big. So
obviously, South Florida is great. If you could afford to pay that.
Exactly. Isn't it overpriced already?
I would love to buy in Florida, but it really just comes back to your earlier question. Like, where's the market going? And like, I was like, I'm a crystal ball. So if you know that the market's going to continue to climb and things are going to get great, you can get aggressive, right? You can get aggressive. Anyone who bought anything in 2000, from 2010 and on, like, and held it is doing really great. So like, and that's part of it, so to go into Florida and to buy in South Florida at a basically on a cap rate without having any real upside, anyone could do that. I don't, this is coming from my feeling of why that I think that the market hasn't absorbed this issue right now. So like, I think to buy a property in Florida or to get into a property, to get it in a good basis, and I'm sorry, in South Florida, like Miami, Boca, anywhere in that vicinity, you really are, it's really difficult. So like, and again, even the debt space, right? To buy the debt, which is a whole other conversation. Because when you're buying debt, if you're not buying it at a discount, there's a good chance you're going to get taken out, and you're not going to really reap that much reward.
Right. So
to buy at a number that makes any sense on the debt side, so like, that's also not an option. Because if there's anything goes into default, lenders want whatever they can get. They're not looking to sell short because they know someone will take them out or they'll get paid off in full. So it's a very tricky, from my business model, to buy assets. So I look for situations. That's what I look for, where like, okay, there's a reason why this person can't market the property, right? Or he's not able to sell it, why he can't widely market it. Or he has some distress there he doesn't want people to know about. So it has to happen, quietly. So like I say, South Florida, you look for a place where there's upside. Jacksonville, I believe there's a lot of upside there. I think there's upside in, between Tampa and Orlando, that whole corridor there, I think.
Right.
I think there's upside, you just got to try to, it's you got to spend a lot of time learning your markets, talking to people, figuring out, and some places are block by block, right? You have to really,
You got to know your stuff. You got to know your
neighborhood. You got to know your stuff, and you have to know how to learn your stuff also.
Exactly. Okay, I'll tell you something. We learned a lot. We heard a lot, and we discussed. We've discussed here a good portion of things in regard to notes and commercial real estate and acquisitions and markets and COVID. And we've covered a bunch of stuff. I just want to ask you last thing before we go. What would you say? You said you have about 5 members in staff, 6 members, whatever it is. What is the most important thing for you when you hire a person into your staff that you know that's what I'm looking for, or that person is going to be right by my side and I'm going to run with that guy, or men or women, doesn't matter. What is most important to you in terms of their professionalism and where they come from, et cetera?
Good question. What's most important? Obviously, honesty. You got to know you can trust them. You got to know, you know. I look at anyone that I hire, and I think what I want to be their partner. Right?
Would that? That's a great. What a great take. Go ahead.
That's what I would say. You know, I think that yeah. Because again, you know, this is someone. It's a relationship. It's not just. You know, and it's trust. It's all about trust, right? If you can't trust someone, then, you know, how do you have them work for you, with you, for you?
That's a great take. I love that. Before we close, I want to ask you, if you want to give one suggestion, one advice for people who want to get into commercial real estate and they don't know much of it and they want to get a great tip, what would you tell them? What's the first thing they have to do and the second thing they have to do?
First thing and second thing.
From your background, I already know the answer, but and from mine, but I want to hear your take on that term. A young person is coming for you for advice and saying, I want to get into commercial real estate. How do I do that? What should I do? And they never went to Shaq, Shaq Real Estate School, the fancy school in Manhattan, which is a beautiful school, but they didn't do it. And they have the passion for it. What would you tell them to do?
Ask a lot of questions. I would say ask a lot, for sure. Just, you got to never stop asking and never be afraid.
Would you tell them to go and join a mortgage brokerage? That's where you tell them?
Is that what your question? Would I tell them to join a mortgage brokerage? I definitely
think. Like you did? You think so?
I think that's a great start. I think it's an excellent start. Like I said, you know, and it's a way that you can, listen, not everyone's a salesperson. Right? Not everyone knows how to sell.
Right.
But there's so many different, like as a mortgage broker, there's so many different, in that business, there's a lot of different things that you could do. You know, there's underwriters, you know, people that are good with numbers, people that are just good, like with people. I think that's an excellent place to start.
I think you're right, because also when you become, maybe you're not a sales guy, but you learn how to sell, which is the most important thing in business. Maybe in principle, you're not a big salesperson, but you learn how to buy. And that is huge. And right. Because you're standing right in the middle of this whole thing.
Learning how
to buy in real estate is key.
In the sales brokerage business, I'd say the difference is were you ever in brokerage? I think you mentioned before, were you ever in the brokerage business?
I was in real estate investment banking, which is very similar.
Right. Yes. So if you're selling real estate, I think that,
yeah, I was in brokerage. What am I talking about? I started my path in real estate. I actually was, head of marketing and sales for a very large company actually in Israel. And I was in charge of North America marketing and sales at the time. So that's how I started off when it came to real estate. Yes.
Right. So selling real estate.
So I was marketing and selling also in practice. Selling condos at the time. And then I moved more to the, I would say, acquisition end of things. Underwriting and all that stuff, but you know, I used it obviously for putting together, you know, funds and sponsors and so on and so forth. But I think selling is a big part.
So to sell real estate, though, but I was saying, if you're going to be in the investment sales business, first of all, it's very hard to make money. Like, it's going to take you a long time to actually bring home a check if you're selling real estate.
Right.
So, and number one, in mortgage brokerage, I think you just have, you get to look at more transactions. I think that's the most important. They look at as many transactions as humanly possible.
Right.
You know.
Great. Listen, Mandy, it's been awesome and great, and we heard so many great things, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Tell me something. If you want to leave, I don't know if you do, but if you want to leave your information, where can people find you, whether they're brokers and they have deals, or I guess, I don't know if you take investors or whatever you take. If you want to tell people where you are, where can they find you?
Sure. Well, my this is not on LinkedIn, right? It's LinkedIn, right? So
it's on LinkedIn. We are on Facebook. We are on YouTube. You name it, we're everywhere.
So you can,
and on podcast, yeah.
Look me up on LinkedIn. I'm very responsive. You could call me 732-228-8686. I'll even tell
that's
you
a commercial. Stuff. Sounds like a commercial. Exactly. Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Email me mendy@watermarkre.com. That's watermark with a Q, re.com. And reach out. Would love to. I love to talk. I love to help. You know, talk with people, help them, listen, and however I can be of service, I'm happy to do that.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for watching. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Mandy, and I'll see you in the next show, you guys.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.